This episode is sponsored in part by Swim. Okay, here's a depressing stat. 70% of shoppers who want your products never actually buy them. They browse, they consider, then they forget. That's revenue walking out the door. Swim Wishlist Plus turns browsers into buyers. Customers save products they want, get notified when prices drop or items restock. You can also engage them in personalized fashion through your marketing or sales outreach. It's like having a personal shopper reminding them to come back and buy from you instead of your competitors. And 45,000 stores already use it, and it only takes 5 minutes to install. You could try it free today for 14 days. Go to getswim.com/Kurt. That's swimwithay.com/Kurt. Turn those maybe laters into sales today. Getswim.com. Hey, Kurt here, and I got good news. You are going to Denver with me. Well, sort of. See, last week I went to Denver, Colorado for Smart Marketer Live. It's a small marketing conference that bills itself as not your typical marketing conference. Well, we're going to talk to the attendees, hear a few clips, and we're going to figure it out for ourselves if that holds true. Let's go. Those are airplane noises.
All right, we're here with Beef Brody, Tactical Baby Gear, Fight Soap, other things, serial entrepreneur, and we're at, Smart Marketer?
Smart Marketer Live, Denver, Colorado.
All right, give me, this is day two for you.
Yes.
Give me your impression of the vibe, the people.
The vibe and the people, the vibe's great. I mean, everybody in the community is awesome. The people are great. The presentations have been really good. There's a lot happening, obviously, with Meta's platform and the whatever the new update is
to Andromeda.
Andromeda, yes, thank you. I mean, so far the vibe of the event is creating volumes of very different content that will find the avatar, and they're talking about how that is, you know, really the targeting is happening with the creative. It's not happening at the ad set level or the campaign level these days. So that's been a lot of the buzz around here. It's just like creating lots of variety of content to find different kinds of customers.
Okay, yes. That is the takeaway I got, was like, hey, to succeed with performance marketing, you need to consider hook, avatar, product, offer, but then also, you know, ultimately we need like 30 types of content to try for one thing, and then maybe you get lucky and one of those really outperforms.
Yeah, and then you can double down on the spend of it or whatever, but yeah.
All right, so everything's about... When you talk about performance marketing at one of these events, it's always about Meta, but then everyone wants like, all right, what's the hot new thing, and what is it? Is it TikTok? Is it something else?
I'm hearing discussions about TikTok Shop. There'll be a presentation on that we haven't seen yet. I feel like I'm getting some mixed feelings about TikTok Shop, where
that's
it's like
about right.
There's people who are like generating lots of revenue on it, but there's other brands who are like, yeah, we do really well on it, but it's a lower average order value, kind of a shittier customer. You're really dependent on organic virality, some of that kind of stuff. And in their case, it was really depending on sending lots and lots of free product out to creators to create that potential virality.
Yes, like it works, but that only works for a very specific kind of business.
It does, right? And it's kind of a flash in the pan, because if you're depending on that organic virality, like that'll hit and it'll go away. And the margins are thin on stuff like that because you're sending out so many products for free and commissions and the platform fees. And then the creators don't really have any brand loyalty.
Yeah.
You know, so whatever's hot trend that week is what they're going to push and promote. So
okay.
It's not something we're going to look into.
And how about AppLovin?
So... We were pushed pretty hard on AppLovin to do AppLovin a few months ago, and we had some opportunities and we decided to pass it up. It didn't feel like it was right for our brand.
It's a new thing.
It would be a little different for us, and we weren't so sure that our customers would be there and how that would integrate. And, you know, with brand, we're like really intentional about what we pair our brand with and how that might get perceived. But then we heard a story last night of a brand who had...
I was there for this. It was a delight.
Major success, and had spent
like... Eight-figure success.
$3 million on the platform they spent because of the success they were having, and it was unreal. And the guy who was trying to convince me, Mr. Attila from Smart Marketer, just comes out of the blue with a, I told you so.
He did.
So I was eating my words with that.
Oh, yeah.
But you never know. I mean, to his point, though, you have to kind of trust your gut. And just because it works for some one brand doesn't mean it would work for
also another. True.
So
yeah. And, you know, grass is always greener.
That's right.
Okay. Not in any talk have I heard this brought up, but in the hallway track, you know, just being around people, seeing other attendees talk to each other, I've heard multiple people ask this question. What are you doing about tariffs?
Mm.
And then everybody just goes,
Yeah, I mean, I don't deal with any of that stuff within our business. That's something my business partner handles. Obviously, we're paying the increased tariffs. We're eating some of it. A lot of it isn't where it has settled to for us in the countries we manufacture in. Isn't much higher than what it was previously. But we are considering a potential price increase to make up for some of it. But that's how we're handling it right now.
I mean, that was the response a lot of people had. Isn't the easy way out? Well, just move manufacturing here. Why not just manufacture back here, beef?
We don't have, none of the businesses, you know, here, especially the smaller businesses like we are, even though we're, you know, we do a fair amount of revenue, but we're not the type of business that can just open a factory in the U.S. tomorrow and bring that online, train people to work. U.S., like trying to find people to work in a factory in the United States to do cut and sew would be difficult.
Yeah.
Asia is really good at it. Like, there's no one better. And it would cost so much that no one would buy the product.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, I understand the sentiment of, you know, bringing manufacturing back to the U.S. And I think that's more applicable to Apple, to Ford, Chevrolet, yeah, like, you know, auto manufacturers, maybe appliances, you know, like some of that kind of stuff. But to think that any of these small brands are going to like suddenly open up a factory in the U.S. to do something, like, it's just preposterous, truthfully.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating.
No, I agree with you. Okay. When you get back to Hilton Head, what's one thing you're going to try? One thing you're going to do differently? Like, we heard a lot of tips from about Meta today. One thing.
So Ezra really made a point to harp on the point of slowing down. And, you know, we're all so busy in our lives and we're trying to be busy and do all this stuff and make things happen. And, you know, slowing down to think about what you're doing, be more methodical about it, be more intentional with what you're doing. And then he said that there was a statistic, you know, it's like 4% of your actions generate like 64% of what happens, meaning... of all the inputs you're putting in, it's like such a small percentage of it actually moves the needle. That like, try to be more methodical about what you're doing and like eliminate that other 96% of bullshit that, you know what I mean? So that's a big takeaway. I try really hard to just block out certain days in my schedule because we're so big in content creation and like trying to turn off the brain and eliminate the inputs and sort of slow down and think. That's my big takeaway right now.
All right. All right, talking Shopify, Tactical Baby Gear.
Yep.
It's on Shopify. It's one of the best looking Shopify sites. I use it as an example site when I show people, like, here, you know, this is about what you could build. I think what's incredible about that is not a custom theme. Almost none of that is customized.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's just a straight up Shopify premium template. Why do you not go harder on, well, you know, talk to me about that. Like, actively avoiding... hey, let's build a custom template and instead just filling it out with content.
Yeah, I think there's several approaches to that. I think as we mature as a business, first of all, we found a template that I thought worked well for the size catalog we had.
For sure.
And knowing that we have lots of different collections and we could kind of navigate that and having different carousels and blah, blah, blah.
I think it's Enterprise.
That's right.
It's called Clean Canvas Enterprise.
Enterprise. It's a great theme. And I think you could use it really well with a small catalog as well.
Yeah.
But the more we've mature and the more, you know, the more we think we can do on the front end to attract customers to us, you know, like makes the conversion rate easier. One, but it's a really great layout to begin with. It doesn't need a lot. Like, maybe we adjusted some padding and some super shit like that, right? But, like, I don't think that you're going to widget your way to success. You know what I mean? Like, you're not just going to layer on a bunch of apps and widgets and, like, suddenly change your business overnight. It just doesn't happen. There's, like, a lot of other fundamental things that need to be done to get to that point. So, if the content... And by content, I mean, if you're educating your customer on the website with what the product is, how it works, answering their questions along the way, removing any objections on why they would buy, it should just work, you know?
You know, and I think that's, we're going to wrap it up there, ending on, it should just work. Oh my gosh, and not widgeting your way to success. I love both these takeaways.
Yeah.
Steve Brody, awesome, Bashful Baby Geek.
Amen. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you. All right, I'm here with Brett Curry from OMG Commerce, who at this point has become a recurring character anytime I do lightning interviews, because he is at every event. He, as Harley Finkelstein said, I was like furniture at these Shopify events. He truly, the designation of furniture belongs to you.
Furniture, like a rash that won't go away, something. Like, I'm always there.
What piece of furniture do you identify as?
Oh, that's a great one. I think like a good comfy couch, you know? I'm like, I mean, I'm not small enough for just a chair. I'm a pretty large guy, so I think like a comfy couch, oversized couch, or maybe one of those old leather couches, something like that.
I embody like some kind of practical storage, just okay. Full of various trivia that's useful.
I love
put that in there and forgot.
Storage bin. Yeah.
Storage bin.
What furniture?
Organized.
That's a great question. Yeah.
Why do you come to Smart Marketer Live? Like year after year, it's not a big conference.
Right.
You know, it's a small one. I like the small ones, but
I do too.
What are you getting out of this?
I mean, at the core, it's really hanging out with Ezra and Molly and John and the crew. And it is seeing people like you. You know, they attract other, you know, individuals who are doing some pretty cool stuff up there. And so that opportunity to reconnect is really cool.
Yeah.
I like sharing from stage. So this year I'm talking YouTube, which is a recurring topic for me as well. And so, yeah, I found that like the best connections that I've ever made often happen at events. A lot of the breakthroughs or takeaways that I get or things that cause a business inflection happen at events. I think differently when I'm at an event, kind of away from the office a little bit. And so, yeah, it's valuable. And I go to fewer events than I used to. Now I go to maybe six or so a year, something like that. Yeah, yeah.
So in of the talks you've heard, was there any like takeaway tip? It's got to be hard to impress you doing these all the time.
I've heard it all. I know it all. No, just kidding. No, there's been so many good talks. One of the interesting things is both Ezra and Molly, they do a really good job of blending like architect your life in a way that matters so that your business supports your life. And so you're doing things like family and personal growth and other things that bring joy. And they have a really good balance. It's not just grinding so that you can make money and so you can enjoy your life in 3 decades. Like that's a silly advice. So that's always great. But at this conference, I really loved the AI and creative session yesterday from Alex with AdCrate. And I like the way he talked about it because, you know, we all see like AI content or people saying like AI is going to replace your creative team and it's going to replace your creative strategist. And pretty soon it's just going to be AI agents running all companies. And I think that there may be like some elements of truth to that. AI is certainly disrupting. But I like the way he framed it where they're using AI heavily in the research stage. So we're doing something that we do a lot of at OMG, and that's using Claude projects. So like
I love Claude projects.
Filling in lots of data, giving Claude or any, you know, ChatGPT as well, giving it context to your brand or to your problem, and then asking it to come up with copy and solutions and things like that.
Yep.
So using AI for research, then using AI for concepting, and then they are using AI to create finished ads. But those ads, there's a catch. Yeah, only like 20% of their ad accounts are AI ads. AI ads only make about 20% of their ad accounts. So 80% are still ads generated by humans. And generally the winning ads, the ads that are really crushing it, are not the AI ads. AI is getting better. And so this is not a dig at AI, but it's like, see where it fits now and also where it's going.
I just think when people are new to it, they tend to think like, oh, it finishes the end creative output.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, actually, it's everything leading up to that point.
Right, right.
And then that's where it goes off the rails.
Yes. Yeah, and it's also, you did a great job of talking about, really, AI is only going to help you be good as a copywriter or marketer if you're already good as a copywriter or a marketer, right? And then it's going to help you be more productive, more output. But if you like know nothing and you're just using AI, you're probably not going to come up with very good stuff.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's been my experience with it. Have you heard any interesting gossip? You know, when you're talking between halls, you hear a lot of
gossip. Ooh, what's the...
One of the things that surprised me...
The scuttlebutt, so to speak. Yeah.
The number of people who are like, yeah, you know, hit my breakthrough in my business, and it's successful, and we're running profitably, and we're scaling.
Yeah.
And the problem is the time it took to get there. And the loans...
Yeah, I know.
...now has to be serviced.
Right.
And so it's like, now you're essentially, like, running the race with weights on.
Yes.
And it surprised me, you know, I heard that story once, like, yeah, for sure. But then I heard that story multiple times in one night.
Interesting.
I was like, huh.
Specifically that took too long to scale and the brand had a lot of debt on their business.
Ended up like figuring it out, carrying the debt.
Yeah.
And then like, all right, now you got to race ahead of that. And I think that's often why people end up with your private equity partners.
Right.
That's when they start thinking about, oh, outside investment starts sounding pretty good.
This is owning a brand, an e-commerce brand or omni-channel brand, it's cash intensive. And so it's not just new customer acquisition. It's not just profits. It's cash flow. And like, how are we predictably, forecasting our cash flow, managing our cash flow? Because you could be profitable and still go out of business if you don't manage your cash flow. So like all those things go together. Super important. It's been really interesting for us, you know, working with bigger brands, you know, mostly 8 and 9 figure brands and some high 7 figure. But the last couple of years in e-commerce have been really interesting, you know. Peak COVID, everything was like, go, go, go. We'll figure out profits later. Let's just get customers, to people like being like, oh crap, I'm not sure we're making any money, to like all kinds of changes with supply chain issues and the tariffs and like, now more than ever, there's this understanding of, I need to have my financial house in order and really have all these things kind of buttoned up. And so that's a huge topic. The other kind of things in the hallways people are talking about is Meta and some of the Meta updates with Andromeda.
Right. Yeah,
and
the
creative
last. That was the
diversity and things. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so that's been really great. You know, there's a great Meta rep here who gave us some good insights. But it's one of those things, and I heard Cody Ploffer from Jones Road Beauty tweet this just yesterday, actually, where really now it's not just like creative iteration. And I'm a YouTube guy. Creative iteration actually works on YouTube. But with Meta, it's probably more like you need creative diversity and based on avatars or personas. And so you can't just take this winning ad and make subtle tweaks and like have 20 different versions of it. Meta's not going to reward you for that. It's more about, how are we creating unique creatives for different avatars and personas? That's how your ad account is really going to be able to reach a new level of scale. So a lot of people talk about that.
That changed my perception.
Yeah.
And made it clear how difficult it is just because the level of creative output that's required.
Now. Right, right. And now it can't just be, I'm spinning up 30 different variations. It's like, I need 30 new concepts.
Yep.
30 new concepts. To 30 different personas, maybe not 30 different personas, but yeah, it's got to be got to be different for sure. Yeah.
Brett Curry, OMG Commerce. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Here's a word from our sponsor, Zipify. You know why they call it Black Friday? It's when businesses finally dig out of the red and turn real profit. Want to squeeze every penny from your Black Friday sale? One click upsell is the easiest money you'll make all season. OCU automatically increases average order value by up to 30% with AI-powered upsells at every step of your customer journey. Plus, there's a new tool built right in, Zipify Post Profit. Post Profit monetizes your thank you page with brand-safe ads from partners like Hulu, GoDaddy, and Disney+. Doesn't cost you anything. Just switch it on and get paid pure profit for every view automatically. Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Christmas, earn up to 30% more from every order all year long. Don't leave money on the table this holiday season. Go to Zipify.com/Kurt for your 30-day free trial. That's Zipify.com/KURT.
Is there, when you're growing, you kind of hit a plateau, you hit a ceiling, trying to break through that ceiling to sort of the next level.
Yeah.
Have you seen in the past foundational or fundamental things that you pick up on that are the reason that you hit a ceiling? Is it, do you need to change your mindset? Is it additional sales channels? Is it just spending more money? Is it new product?
So, yeah, let's talk for a second about the trajectory of business in general. I talked about this on my strategy table, but it's like, doesn't matter the business you're in. This is, look, for I would say 99.7% of businesses fit this description. There is the occasional, you know, outlier that does not have this experience, but even they have it within a microcosm of what I'm about to explain. This is what happens in business, okay? If you're lucky, you have an ascent, right? So business works. So business goes under immediately, you don't have this. You have some form of an ascent. That's a great period, and you could do things to maintain that ascent. Eventually, no matter what, you have a plateau. And you can do some things, we'll talk about these in just a minute, to maintain that plateau for as long as you can, maybe even ascend again. And then eventually, you have a decline. And you can be declining, 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 and we call that the melting ice cube, and you wanna slow the melt of that ice cube. There's some conversations to have with that. Like for example, Zipify, I can tell you about how I did this with Zipify Pages, right? High ascent, plateau, decline, melting ice cube. Who the hell wants a landing page builder in 2025? I launched this in 2013, so TBD. But yeah, then you could be Kodak and then come all the way back with a new product altogether, a new brand, whatever. But you're gonna go through that cycle, and you may go through it many times. And where you found yourself, because we were chatting and I know a little bit about your story and we've common experiences with our daughters and that kind of thing. So you kind of went on the ascent. And you kind of got some things during that ascent that worked against you that were macroeconomic, right, in nature, and macro things outside of the business operations, right? There was the economy, there was COVID, there was your personal family life, there was all kinds of stuff that kind of like slowed your ascent, but you still had it in a really wonderful way. And then somehow, even with all that chaos and intensity from the economy, from your personal life, from all these people getting into the space, you were able to kind of plateau and not decline, just kind of set a plateau, which speaks to your operating abilities. And here you're kind of stuck. And now you want to grow again. So the reasons for plateau also tend to be the levers to turn to get out of a plateau, okay? There's a couple of them. One often common thing that people report after they've been through this cycle is they plateaued because they were stuck in their own container of thinking, right? It's like, I know what I know, I have the blind spots I have, I think the way I think, and I'm in charge of this. And I don't have anybody who's a sounding board to bring additional ideas, strategies. I'm a solo founder, I don't have a board, I don't have an investor, I don't have a partner, whatever. It's like you just kind of have the systems and processes you have and you're sort of stuck in that. And ways to solve that is to bring in outside thinking. But the interesting thing about outside thinking is it's not enough to have it one time. It requires consistent, iterative brain melding to get like a second person's consistent input into the business. So you can bring in additional thinking. What does additional thinking bring to the table? Well, what unlocks growth are a couple of things, right? Sometimes, as in Boom, for example, right? So Boom has this issue and we're solving it, but it has this similar issue. We have one thing we sell, which is multi-purpose blush sticks. Well, guess what? Some women don't wear blush. They might wear mascara. They might wear lip gloss. They might be interested in rejuvenating under eye cream. But we have one front-end sales funnel that all of our marketing goes to. So in order to unlock scale, this is a play that I use often in business. I launch a new hero SKU that I can get a different avatar to buy. Right? You sell to dads. Maybe there's something you could sell to moms. Maybe there's something you could sell to uncles. I don't know. Maybe there's a whole good category of product you could sell to dads. So there's two ways this works. One is new hero SKU to the same avatar. The other is unlocking a new avatar to the current hero SKU. So it's like that works really well, reliably, right? Like with Boom right now, one product that we're able to bring in sales on this year that we didn't have last year is something to do with under eye circles. We've known forever that women report feeling, in our demographic, these ladies report to us feeling unhappy with their with the changes to their hormones and skin that result in the appearance in their minds of dark circles under their eyes. Now, sometimes it's not even dark circles under their eyes, it's shadows and whatever. Anyhow, And we've had content on this, and we've done stuff for this, but we don't believe in, hey, you've got something wrong with you and we'll fix it. Like, that's not, we're not the people who are gonna try to fix a problem that you have. We're the people who are gonna celebrate you as you are with this brand. But we actually ended up developing a product that is more of a skincare than a cosmetic. And it's really wonderful for rejuvenating the skin under your eyes. Long story short, it's a new front end offer to a different app, to the same group, but that solves a different pain point. So they'll buy it from us on the front end, but you get new people in who wouldn't buy the blush sticks. So that's one way, new avatar, new product. Like you mentioned, another way is you have an avatar, you have a product that you're selling, you have a sales process for it, you can unlock a new channel. And in D2C e-commerce, there's not a lot of channels. There's organic, there's paid on a bunch of different platforms. So you can unlock a element within a vertical, right? You can unlock it like, hey, you got paid on TikTok, but not on Google. You add Google and you get some extra scale there, right? So you can unlock a paid channel, but it's like paid organic. There's authoritative influencer where you've got like people who have actual followings promoting you, which usually means you're a brand over 30 to 40 million in sales already because you can afford to pay for that. You're not going to pay for that at your size, probably. You have like cold direct mail. You have affiliate. Affiliate could be really interesting for you because you have a high average order value. And affiliate is one that most people in this room don't do, affiliate marketing, right? Then there's like within the paid category, TV rate, like, so Navaj, $100 million a year brand, 20 some odd million in spend, 85% of it on TV and radio. Most brands in here aren't on TV and radio. So there's other channels you could do. So those are some ideas. And then I don't want to take all the time, but I have some other ideas for how you overcome plateaus. And sometimes it's replacing the leadership team. Not that I'm telling you that you should do this and your brother was sitting at the table, so I got to fire your brother. There he is next to you there. What's up, dude? He's your little brother too. How rude if you fire your little brother for an easy to root. But yeah, I mean, like adding in somebody who's got some skill set that you don't already have.
Okay, so I wrapped up day one of Smart Marketer Live. It's a 2-day conference. And you know, my initial takeaway, having done this last year, is this year it is a lot of very practical advice focused specifically on internet marketing. And so like there was a talk on TikTok shop, a talk on email marketing, but then I believe the entirety of the rest of the discussions that day were on Meta. Because if you are in year one of an online store, your ad spend is probably, or should be, something like 80% Meta, 20% Google Shopping, and then that's it. You really don't have the budget, time, or experience to be focusing on everything else. And like a really experienced brand with big budgets, there's still going to be 50% ad spend on Meta, you know, for an online brand. You know, it's really quite impactful for a room full of people responsible for internet businesses to hear a bunch of advice on Meta. And it's helpful for me because I don't run Meta ads for clients anymore. I haven't done it in years. And we stopped doing it because I said, you know, I really want to specialize on Shopify itself, but also because it was really hard. And that was like 2014 when compared to now, you know, it was like shooting fish in a barrel and a lot simpler. What I learned, you know, today and, you know, what I've heard the last 2 days talking to attendees here is it seems that if you're wondering why your Facebook ads got very difficult or, you know, things got harder and you started to struggle or not seeing the same results, and it seemed to happen over the summer, you know, like 2 months ago, it's the Andromeda update with Facebook. And they even had a Meta rep there, you know, who's talking about it. And so she seemed to confirm it, you know, that, yeah, if you're struggling, it's because you've got to adapt to these changes, this new algorithm. And, you know, one of the ways to do that is restructuring the ad account. You know, that's too technical for me. Like, I don't have the experience there. But it seemed like really what it wanted was put a ton of ad creative, like radically different ad creative. Not just like, you know, same ad, but we tweak the text that's over the video, right? Like completely different concepts and like creator, behind the scenes, UGC, just totally different ads in one ad set. And, you know, I could be misinterpreting, but for that, you know, that Andromeda update to work, it really wants these like radically different ads and it wants a lot of creative, just an unreal amount of creative to test. And once it had that, like 30 pieces of creative to test, then, you know, you start to see more success with it.
The other thing that was interesting that the rep said was, well, you know, you have like one successful ad, you keep cloning it, you're trying things that ad diversity in the creative can help. And so there's one person who's, you know, talking about they want radically different ads, meaning like different creatives, different formats, like video sales letter versus UGC versus behind the scenes. The other, you know, the meta rep talking about different ads, you know, very different ads and diversifying the ad creative. She literally meant diversity. You know, generally the, you know, the store owner ends up being the type of, you know, person by cultural background that you attract to the store. But it's only, you know, just because you are unintentionally holding up the mirror in that way. And so if you have like a successful ad set that's not scaling, often the trick could be, hey, you know, all right, you've got like this one white guy with a podcast keeps doing these ads and they're successful, but that's it. All right, do the same thing, but now it's a mom, you know, and just like try entirely different people with different looks, like literally just different looks, can be helpful with scaling ad creative on Meta. The, you know, at the end they're wrapping up with AI. It's like we hear AI mentioned throughout the day, but no real like heavy focus or talks on AI until the end. And it was still through the lens of a, you know, an ad agency owner. And he's talking about AI for creating these ads. And I really enjoyed his approach. You know, it felt similar to my own use for these tools. And what he was saying was, you know, where people, when they think about, hey, generating ads with AI, they go straight to, it's going to make the ad. And it's really, you know, probably not the way to go. You can generate great videos now, especially with that SAR update that happened in the last several weeks. You could create really great video ads with AI, but they, you know, in this gentleman's experience and others, they're not going to perform well. And I think there's a reason you don't see a ton of these AI ads. You know, you want the stuff that looks genuinely real, the stuff that is harder for AI to create, especially like ugly ads, you know, ugly converts. But with AI generation, unless the intent is to make an ad that is very clearly AI generated, then it, you know, that works. But otherwise, probably not going to perform great. And that was for like video and images. But where they did excel with AI was using it for the idea generation, for ideation. And I've had luck with that too, but garbage in, garbage out with AI. Like the way I've had success doing it is create a project or custom GPT, you know, depending on which tool you're using, where you've preloaded it with a system prompt that's like, hey, you know, gives it the context, and then, you know, and really establishes like your thinking, what you like, your approach. Because if you think about how an LLM is trained, it's trained on, you know, garbage it ate off the internet, just like whatever's out there. And you, as a marketer who knows your business, just have a better sense than that garbage is going to. And so, you know, adding in that layer, that additional context, is what makes all the difference. And then including, you know, some files where you say, like, this is examples of successful ads that we've created. This is examples of ad formats we like. This is example of successful competitors' ads. And this is just domain knowledge about the brand. And then, you know, let it run through ideation that way. Then, you know, once you've got those ads, if you've even given it like a framework about what you think a successful ad is, that's it, and you've got those ideas, you can ask it, hey, you know, rank these, and give me the reasoning. And so, that like, you really move very quickly through that phase. Because otherwise, when you're trying to generate like 30 ad creatives for, you know, this new meta algorithm to be successful, I mean, creating 30 ads is hard enough. Coming up with the idea for 30 ads, and they're all supposed to be radically different. You know, an entirely different look, an entirely different hook, an entirely different format. That's tough. And so you need the assistance with AI generating the stuff, you know, with that ideation. Man, even if you do it once, it's a tough trick to repeat that kind of creativity. So that's my, I mean, that was 8 hours. That was all day. That's my brain dump on day one. And after day two, I'll share more on that. And then we're going to go do a party at Lucky Strike tonight. Day two, Smart Market Alive, heading into the Denver Art Museum. And this time, I'm going to get the doors correct. Oh, I did it.
So we're outside enjoying, we had a food truck lunch here in Denver outside the art museum. And I'm with Attila from, and you're with Smart Marketer.
Yes, I am.
And I saw you speak yesterday, right?
I did. I was on stage talking about meta advertising and to have a slightly different view, perhaps, to others, how they scale their ads.
Okay, tell me what you think a lot of, what the wrong advice is. Where are people going wrong with scaling meta ads?
I think the main problem, they listen to people to an extent where they think there is only one way to succeed when it comes to meta ads. And I do believe that every business is different. And because the businesses are different, I think you need different strategy and also different campaign structure and scaling method to be able to succeed.
All right, I'm a meta ads layperson, but I heard a lot of discussion of campaign structure. In loose terms, give me the high level here. How important is this? You know, what are we really changing?
I mean, some people are saying that you do not need to touch anything when it comes to campaign setup because the algorithm is going to figure out everything for you. All you need to have is good creative. And you give the machine the good creative, your credit card details, and you will become a millionaire next day.
Wait, that's not how it works?
Unfortunately, it isn't, because then I would do the exact same thing. So unfortunately, or fortunately, because, you know, I can keep my job, I think there is still a lot of manual setup which should be and could be done. Having said that, I do have ad accounts which are working amazingly well on these current recommendations. But at the same time, you still cannot just let it run. You still need to optimize it. You still need to launch new assets. So it's definitely not for those people who want to set it up, let it run, and forget about it.
Okay. And then the other thing I want to ask you about, because I heard a lot of discussion yesterday about creative. Yep. That almost seemed to be the theme of the day was, hey, for meta ads to work today in this environment, you need a lot of creative and not just like, oh, we made a video and then we changed the headline. Like, just different formats, different people, you know, different avatars, demographics, like really change things up. Talk to me about that creative approach a little bit.
I do agree with that it's definitely the creative is the most important part of your advertising effort. What surprises me is that people are just talking about this now, because this has been the case in the last 5 to 10 years
since. Okay, you're right.
Since I'm doing meta advertising, so I do remember a scenario which happened 5 years ago, where a specific ad image was working very well for the client, and not because of the product what was in the image, but what was in the background. So I knew that there's a lot much going on when it comes to creatives. Having said that, I'm very confident to say this. Let's say you have a winning creative. Your campaign structure, it still could determine the success of that creative. And on different accounts, different campaigns are working. So I can have business A running on the very consolidating account structure, and this, let's call it a winning creative, and it's winning. I can have another account with a different campaign structure with the same winning creative, and it is not meeting the benchmarks.
So that's the advantage to like the excessive amount of creative, you know, very different things, is just testing it and trying, like test and tune until you get to the right thing.
Absolutely.
And then eventually you'll exhaust that audience and you got to do it all over again.
Yeah, absolutely. But also at the same time, a lot of people get it wrong. And my colleague Ben Bennett was talking about this on stage today. It's not necessarily the amount of creative what you need to have. Yes, you need to feed the machine with quantity, but what's more important, it's quality.
Okay.
So you if you throw 1,000 creatives at the algorithm and all was done rushed and never thought through the process of the creative and what you try to say and who you're targeting. And then on the other example, you have 10 creative and you really put your research into those. You might have 2 winning creatives out of 10. You might have none out of 1,000. So it's not necessarily just quantity, it's the quality as well what matters.
All right, give me your number one tip. Give me the key takeaway folks should have.
I would say try to test in a way where you change one variable at a time, because then you know how that change made your performance better or worse. If it made it better, keep doing it and keep working on it. If it didn't work out, then test something else. Have an open mind about new things, but do not rush and change everything because somebody said it's working for them.
Good advice. Attila, Smart Marketer.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ever had a customer cancel an order because they were shopping while high or because they broke up with their significant other? Those are real reasons customers could cancel, and they're a real headache for both you and your customers. Why should they have to email support to change, cancel, or update an order? Enter Cleverific. With Cleverific, your customers can edit their orders themselves through a self-service portal. That means fewer support tickets, faster shipping, and fewer returns. Everybody wins. Peter Manning, New York, cut their order support by 99% with Cleverific. Now it's your turn. Listeners of the Unofficial Shopify podcast get 50% off the Pro Plan. Just $49 a month. Go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use promo code KURT50 at checkout. It's less hassle, happier customers with Cleverific.
You help get chickens jacked, is what I'm to understand.
I help get chickens so buff.
Buff Clucks is your business. Incredible business name, because the moment I heard it, understood it, it has stuck with me for 48 hours now, which is remarkable for me. Tell me about what you sell.
Well, first, do you want to hear a fun origin story thing of the name?
Yes.
So I think that when you're coming up with a name for a business, you should ask a child.
Okay.
Because simplicity, like adults, we like to get so cerebral about things. And children are just like, they say it as it is and they keep it simple. And our son, actually, we had our kids like come up with names. And this is one of the names. I think he was 13. So this was a name that a child chose, and it works really well because...
I don't know. I think you got lucky. If we asked our kid, hey, what should we name our cat? And their talk choice was Megatron.
I feel this deeply because we let our kids name our chicken. They're all girls. We've had Hank, Hank 2, Shrew, Gormand. Like, they... Jacket.
Okay.
Crispy. I mean, they're... bad. They're bad at naming things like animals. So yes, we did get lucky that the name that they picked for this one was good.
But what does Buff Cluck sell?
Okay, so we sell a natural herb supplement for backyard chickens. It's loose leaf herbs, botanicals. Every single one of them has medicinal properties that helps chickens repel pests, mitigate parasite load, improves feather health, skin health, better eggs, all around health, like a multivitamin for chickens.
Okay. No, I believe it. We keep small animals. I have rabbits, and their lifespan is very dependent on the quality of their food source.
Yes.
And so I get it. Okay. With an event like Smart Marketer, you being a business owner, what brought you here? Like, what did you want to get out of this?
There's a lot of things that we look for when we come to events. I would actually say that the networking and the people, that is the best part for me. E-commerce is a very solitary, kind of lonely thing to do. And most people have no idea what you're talking about. They can't understand, like, what do you mean? You just sit on your computer and, like, sell stuff? They're picturing, like, old school eBay.
You type on a computer and money comes out?
Yeah. And they like, literally picture that it's something like that. They don't understand the complexity and all the little intricacies and details and issues. But the people here, everybody understands. So the conversations are way deeper, way more powerful. And the leadership has way more context of helping and advising. And it's beautiful.
It's the camaraderie.
It is camaraderie.
It is fun. And it's fun to, I love hearing people complain because they're just like so thrilled that they finally get to talk to someone who understands. It's like, I could, you know, you could complain to like your best friend, your spouse, and they're not going to get it. They're like, yeah, oh man, really? But like, they don't actually get it. They're humoring you.
But do you know what they actually say too? Is like, well, at least you get a stay at your house in your pajamas to deal with that.
Okay, it's like, look, I traded one set of problems for another.
Yeah. <All right.
laughs> But yeah, no, there's that, absolutely. There's that community, that camaraderie. From the talks, was there like a theme to the event that you noticed? Because we're at the end of day two.
Yeah, so I think that every person is going to capture things out of every single speaker, talk, piece of networking, roundtable that they're ready to receive at that time. So if I came to this event, this exact thing, but it was the version of me last year, the things I would have taken away would have been completely different than the things that I took away this time. So what I took away from myself this time was that, like, I need to stop being a baby and like make my business world-class in every area that I can make it world-class. That we're past like MVP time. And
do it nice or do it twice?
Yes, that. We're ready for doing it nice.
Okay. Of all the pieces, where do you think the bottleneck is? Where you're like, this is the thing we really got to focus on fixing first.
So I think the bottleneck is my ego.
Oh.
Yeah, because I really, really want to build this as lean as possible with, if it was just this funny talking about how solitary and like, oh, it's lonely, but I don't want any people, right?
Well, the irony. Payroll. I've seen payroll really can take a business down.
I just don't like to deal with the drama of people.
Okay.
Like I'm like a lone wolf and I don't want to have to be managing everybody's stuff. So I try to have as much software that can just be running 24/7 that doesn't get sick and it doesn't have, you know, time off and all that.
The idea of like a 100-person team is my nightmare.
I know.
When people tell me that, I'm like, oh, please, I don't want to hear anymore.
Yeah, yeah. But I can tell that like a lot of what's holding us back is that because I want software to be covering everything and there are these things that you still need humans to do. And like if I put humans in place to do them, then we can make things world class. We can get bigger. And hopefully it'll actually alleviate some pressure and stress on me rather than.
So you have no employees in this business?
Officially no employees. We do have some contractors.
Okay.
5 contractors.
If you had to invent a single role that you hire for next week, what is it?
I already have this one ready because I've already been like, I need this person. I need a really solid AI prompt engineer that's specific for creating good meta video content for our ads. We already have a pretty solid process that we follow ourselves, but it is time consuming, even as AI. And so I need there to be somebody else that is
I think
running this.
Something you could hire off Upwork pretty easily. And I rarely tell people to go hit Upwork.
You would think. We've got a job posting on there and it's not great.
Interesting.
It's still being a struggle to find a person. So we'll see if we can find somebody. But if I was going to hire one person right now, it would be that person. Another person that I would hire right now it just dawned on me that I need this person. I'm going to go poach an herb and botanical special person that like works right now for like an herb and spice company. And I'm going to go get them.
Okay.
Because it's being a huge bottleneck to have enough herbs from all over the world.
Most of people aren't so excited about being like, I'm going to go poach some employees. They're just like, wow, she's excited about this.
Well, I met a guy that he runs an importing and exporting herbs company. And like, he goes like so deep into this like very granular stuff about herbs and spices that nobody should actually know because it's like so kind of boring, you know? And I was like, okay, actually, I think I need that guy. I need him to like go meet with all the farmers and like get me all of the flowers, all of the herbs, mine.
I like that, like there's a whole interpretive dance that went with this poaching thing.
This is me manifesting all the herbs, all the supplies I need.
So, all right, Buff Flux, is this on Shopify?
Yes.
On Shopify, do you have any favorite apps or an app you wish existed but doesn't?
I love Loop subscriptions.
Loop subscriptions.
Loop has subscriptions, yeah. Increased my subscriptions substantially with very little effort on my part as far, like no running traffic to it, just literally the widget and how it looks has increased our subscriptions.
I'm skeptical. I don't think you're not going to widget your way to success. What's the magic here?
I did nothing. I literally did nothing but change the widget, and it immediately the next day was like boom, 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 boom.
I want to know what's wrong with the old widget.
That's probably what the column was. I don't know.
Or what were you using to run the subscriptions before?
Propel.
All right, I'm not familiar. I'm going to Google if that's the issue.
Okay, and it could be because, once again, that MVP situation, it was like the freebie when we very first built out the Shopify store. It was like a maybe this will be a business kind of energy. We're like, we'll put this free one in here.
All right, if there's an app that you could find today, like what's the one that's missing?
Oh, my gosh. I think about this stuff all the time. Oh, I know exactly what it is. And we're trying to build it, and it is really hard. I need an AI agent that takes incoming calls and knows everything about all of our products and offers and can take payment and totally capture it all, set up subscriptions, all of that. And it's being a problem because of the encryption stuff with taking payment.
Yes. Yeah, as soon as like payments are involved and tokenizing payments, things get sketchy. No one wants to mess with it. I know,
but can you imagine running a sales funnel and somebody answers the phone and takes the payment and you can do it all night long without anybody doing it?
That would be fantastic. That would be quite the dream. Yeah. So you're taking phone orders?
We need to.
Oh boy. Phone orders scare me.
Yeah. But well, my demographic, they're obsessed with wanting to talk to somebody on the phone. And so we don't do it. Yes. Yes. That. Mm-hmm. They want a lot of chicken talk. We don't do phone orders. They want us to, and I do have a customer service person that if somebody gets super insistent, I will be like, call this person and like take their order. Please take their money.
I'm so sorry. What is your name?
Celia.
Celia. Celia Buff Klux. Thank you so much.
Yeah. It's
fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. We're post-conference, you know, off that vibe, tired, flying home, obviously, in an airport. All right. I want to know, Beav. You get back home, what's one thing you're changing? What's one thing you're doing different, your business, that's like a direct takeaway from this conference?
I mean, in general, I think it's, you know, if you're hitting metrics that work for your business, spend more money on ads. For me in particular, that's going to be YouTube ads. We've got some pretty awesome video content that, like, talking with Brett Curry, who's, you know, that's the space. He was like, spend more money on that video. So that's a big takeaway for me. But it was a great, great conference, you know. I think the interesting thing about it was I don't think there was any one takeaway. There was sort of diverse, you know, information that could be applicable to, you know, different people in a different season that their business might be in. So I think that was good.
Okay. And what do you think what kind of person is this conference right for?
I think it's right for a lot of people, you know, like kind of to that point where it's like you got people who are starting out that are, you know, doing a couple hundred thousand or half a million that are trying to just get to that first million. And you've got businesses that are eight figures, nine figures. I mean, it was a pretty broad spectrum. And I think everyone in there was taking something away from it.
Now I would go so broad as like, are you interested in internet marketing? A lot of it applies. Like, yeah, it really leans heavily toward e-commerce, toward Shopify, online stores. But there were like a few outliers. You know, somebody who had like resorts. Mm-hmm. They were just trying to get bookings. It was kind of interesting.
Well, and you know, retail stuff, right?
Retail too.
Tracking retail sales and in-store stuff. But yeah.
All right, who's it wrong for?
I think it's probably not good for someone who thinks they know it all already.
Okay. Yeah, if you should, that's just the wrong attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, or I think if you're looking for like a silver bullet.
True.
Because it was always clear, like, hey, there's a bunch of work that's going to go into this. At no point was anyone promising, like, get rich quick overnight, which I appreciate.
Yes, and you have to be willing to test and learn and try, because that's the other component. Like, this worked for this business. It may not work for you, but it's worth trying because you could have similar results.
All right, give me one connection you made out of this trip. That's the value, the hallway track. Networking.
It is. I mean, there's going to be these one or two nuances you take away, like spend more money on YouTube ads or whatever. But like the real ROI is the people you meet, the networking that become, you know, some of these lifelong connections and friends. This is kind of how you and I met many years ago, was through this world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's cool.
And it was neat to hear, like, Nick Shackelford presented.
And, you know, they're hyper-aggressive in growing Breeze, their THC CBD brand. But, you know, he was talking about, like, how he got connected, and it's through these online parasocial relationships, where, like, once you start creating content, once you start working in public, you just naturally will start to get connected with other people who are doing the same. And so, like, you know, at this event last year, I had lunch with Nick Shackelford, and, like, that's how he knew me. That's how he met Ezra. That's kind of how we all got connected.
That's how I met Ezra. How I ended up on stage, you know, like.
So ultimately, my takeaway is like, man, if you keep posting online and like building networking online, that eventually translates into cool in-person offline relationships. Yeah. Also, man, I had a ton of fun hanging out with you.
Thank you. Totally unexpected and unplanned, but yeah, it was awesome. We had a great week.
Yeah, and everything lined up. Like even our gates were leaving the same time from the airport. So I get a better ending to this vlog by talking to you. Man, anything else? I spent 4 days in Denver. We all did. We didn't hit one dispensary. And there were like two within like 100 feet of that hotel. They were too sketchy for me. Like if you have to buzz me in, I don't know.
Next door to the bail bondsman.
Yeah, next to the bail bondsman.
Classic.
All right, if I wanted to get a baby carrier or otherwise outfit my baby for Afghanistan, where are we going?
you can do that at tacticalbabygear.com.
Beautiful.
And if you need to clean your ass, you can do that at Fight Soap.
Fightsoap.us. I do love Fight Soap. Beef Brody, thank you so much.
Hey, man, thank you.
Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.